And now, Hangar 56 Media presents Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Spike's Car Radio, welcome guys. Good to be with you. Ben Clymer on the show today from Hodinkee. He's going to tell us all about his acquisition of Crown of Caliber. He's also going to tell us about his Zagato ownership and his $100 million valuation on the company Hodinkee. It's an amazing story. It's good to hear from him, even though it's via Zoom. A little program note for next week, Jeremy Piven coming back. Also via Zoom to promote his new movie. I just happened to do that interview today, and it's super fun. We'll be posting that next week. But here, I'm now in the Zuckerman Hangar. Here, somewhere in Beverly Hills. I can't tell you where. He's a very private human. And I noticed Zuckerman on the way in here, and I think it's a result of this robbery that they had on Friday. There's a lot of police out there. Have you driven on Olympic and Robertson?
Of course.
Did you see that weird contraption they put up there?
No.
There's a giant flashing red light speed machine with about 30 different cameras on it. Take note of this next time you drop by. It looks like the type of thing that scans your face and your license plate.
It probably does.
And everything about you. Let me just catch up the folks who don't live in L.A. here and let them know what happened. So in Beverly Hills on Friday... And, you know, junior Rockford Files sleuths, pay attention to the details of this story. There was a gentleman who sells watches, Richard Mille watches in particular, and he was wearing a rose gold RM11-03 flyback chronograph. Retail worth $500,000.
Ooh.
Would you ever wear that much on your wrist?
I would. but it would have to be what I like.
I sold you a gold watch once, remember?
Yes.
And you got rid of it.
Yes.
Why didn't you wear it?
It didn't look right on me.
I thought it looked great. I thought it really made you look like the man you were hoping to be someday.
You know, I liked it a lot, but then one of the attorneys who worked for me liked it better, and because I'm that kind of guy, he asked me to buy it, and I sold it to him.
Do you know what these Richard Mille watches look like?
Does it even look like a watch?
Look behind you. Look at the art behind you.
I understand. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's more abstract than what I'm used to.
Yeah. It's not, well, it's my opinion, not so good. But $500,000 on your wrist?
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I don't know what that means. After a brazen daylight robbery on Friday. Okay, here's the situation. There's this nice little restaurant, Il Pasteo. Outdoors, you can only eat outdoors on Friday. And in this brazen robbery, this is from the article on Friday. And by the way, all robberies are brazen. They're all brazen. Some gunmen walked up to this guy, grabbed the watch, and took off. Let me tell you the situation here, just so you know. And someone was shot. The jeweler, who I'm not going to mention, was sitting at Il Pasteo, a restaurant across from his showroom. So it's across the street. He saw three men in hoodies coming his way. No mention of what kind of hoodies. I'm a big hoodie fan, but I'd like to know that. One of them ran and pulled a gun from his jacket pocket, grabbed me from the back of my chair, choking me, and putting a gun to my head. Let me repeat that, Zuckerman, as you, Rockford Files, this for us. One of them ran and pulled a gun from his jacket pocket, grabbed me by the back of my chair, choking me, and putting a gun to my head. His two friends, one of them is yanking my hand, the other is yanking at my watch. The robbers made off with the rose gold watch, estimated to be $100 million. The jeweler also said, I was fighting
for... Did you say $100 million?
I'm sorry, $500,000.
Half a million.
He was fighting for his life, not the watch, but he wound up with their gun.
I can tell you.
And then the gun went off and grazed a woman who was eating a salad.
A skinny salad.
Suffered minor injuries and some planters were smashed during the melee. There is a $50,000 reward for the return of the watch, but it's worth $500,000.
Or is it?
And it's one of a kind, so where are you going to sell it, all right? It's a crazy story, isn't it?
No, it's not.
You tell me
I
what's
disagree.
Going on. Now, just so you know, these watches, I remember Rafael Nadal wears one. Aurora Strauss, the racer who was on our show, wears one. Pharrell and Drake, they're big.
Farrell?
Yeah, Pharrell.
Pharrell.
Yeah, that guy.
That guy.
Drake.
And Drake. Farrell and Drake, they wear them too.
Yes. And then we had the Lady Gaga with dogs attack.
I could tell you.
Go ahead. Lay it on me. I want to hear your opinion.
Okay.
And it is just Zuckerman's opinion.
This is my... It's Please. The world. We have had for 25 years, a generation, we have been able to be safe with our wealth out in the public in L.A. People have grown very accustomed to being very safe, to nothing happening, and we're back to like maybe the bad old 70s in New York. Purse snatchings, chain grabbings, muggings, but that's where we are. And I'll give you a little background. If you recall, a couple of years ago, there was a wave of house robberies,
smash and grabs.
They're smash and grabs because it is now out there that people have this attainable luxury laying around all over the place. Watches, jewelry, and a lot of houses were broken into. And now it's right up in the street. Guns getting stuck in people's faces and their watches and their valuables being taken. And I don't think it's a surprise.
Wasn't this just about the insurance? Are there really hordes of people driving around with guns trying to get a one-of-a-kind watch they can't sell?
It doesn't have to be one-of-a-kind, but if you're the proprietor of a watch and you're probably on Instagram and you're flashing, you're very publicly, in this world we live in, you are publicly showing your wealth, your swag. It's a marketing tool. You're on Instagram marketing this watch, that watch. We know.
How did they know he was wearing the watch?
Okay. Maybe this, Ferrison.
I'm surprised you're on this side of this.
You might be far-fetched. You might think I'm being far-fetched, but I bet there are. You got the street level dudes, but then you got the guys above them that say, "Okay, there's this guy. This guy, he owns a watch store, Israeli dude, and he's every day he's wearing something different. It's part of his marketing repertoire, and he has never been ripped off before. And he goes out across the street to lunch." Or he goes here or there. I happened to see another video this morning, my dear friend, from a security camera where there was a gentleman who drives around town. He's got a G-Wagon. He's got a Bentley. He was looked like he was coming from the gym going to a parking structure. Somebody was waiting for him. Guy dressed up like, you know, Spider-Man in a hoodie with this whole outfit. And he had a gun.
Did Spider-Man wear a hoodie?
Yeah. Well, he got a gun shoved in his face. Him and his girlfriend were robbed from their watches. Right? So
grew out of the Ciccone's watch thefts past.
Okay. But don't you know that...
But I understand like a Rolex, which you can bury and no one's going to know. But this one-of-a-kind watch, I don't know. I'm a little skeptical.
Okay, whatever. But you realize in Europe for a long time, in Paris, Rome, you can't wear a Rolex. This is what's happening.
There's a lot of street crime. Right.
Right. And guys come up to you. They're on mopeds, motorinas, and they put a gun in your face.
Oh, it's like Gomorrah. That's like Sabura.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So
maybe that's just so, okay.
Well, this is the world we're living in, Ferriston.
Seems pretty nice to me.
Some people have tons of money. Some people don't.
This is what Beverly Hills said. You know, we should talk to our friend, the Beverly Hills cop, and ask him privately about all this. To that end, the city's going to be adding 12 armed security guards. Isn't that what police are?
Isn't that funny?
And 6 marked cars to protect the city's downtown for the foreseeable future. I did notice the police presence on the way to your place here today. But 12 armed security guards.
Have you seen them?
Aren't they police? What is the difference?
That's a really good question. So I'm wondering why the police need to have armed guards. But have you noticed them? They have like white sport utility vehicles with these light racks on top.
No.
You haven't seen those?
No.
Yeah, they got them all over the place here.
Do you have an insurance story for Policy Genius? Do you want to wait? I can do it second. I can do it first. I want to put you on the spot.
What do you want to hear?
All right. It's time for Zuckerman's Real Insurance Stories. Sponsored by
Policy Genius.
Our sponsor, Policy Genius. Go ahead, Zuckerman. What's your real story? And then I'll do the ad.
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, people Again, we're on the point of people think that whatever they do, somebody's going to take care of it. So, to take for example, you could go out to Runyon Canyon, or you could go to some nature area, and you might happen to see like a rope hanging off a tree, like a rope swing.
Yes.
And you may see it over and over again. And then one day you may decide, you know what? I'm going to go up on that swing, and I'm going to swing like Tarzan. Okay?
Yes.
You're swinging like Tarzan, and you lose your grip, and you fall into the ravine.
Did this happen in Runyon Canyon?
All the time. And you fall into the ravine, and your little body gets broken like a bag of potato chips, like pretzel rods getting snapped in half. And guess what? There's no insurance for that. That's your own fucking fault. Don't do it. You're on public park land, and just because you see a rope there doesn't mean that you've been approved to do that, that somehow the city is going to be responsible when you fall off onto your head.
This happens a lot?
All the time.
But the city didn't put the rope up. Any idiot can do it,
so just because it's there.
There you go. That's the lesson you need to learn.
Don't be a dope.
But if you are going to put a rope swing in your yard.
That's a different story.
You need Policy Genius. Spring is springing as we speak, and it's the perfect reminder to quite literally get your house in order. Why not have a head start by revisiting your home and auto insurance with Policy Genius? They've saved reshoppers up to $1,055 per year on home and auto coverage. That's over $1,000 you could use on whatever home improvement project you've got your eye on. Here's how to get started. Go to policygenius.com. Answer a few quick questions about yourself and your property. Then take Policy Genius. Policy Genius will take it from there. They'll compare rates from America's top insurers from Progressive to Allstate to find your lowest quotes. The Policy Genius team will look at all the ways to maximize your savings, including bundling your home and auto policies together. So while you're gearing up for spring cleaning, don't forget to dust off your home and auto insurance policies with Policy Genius. Reshop your rates and you could save up to $1,055. Head to policygenius.com to get started right now. Policy Genius, when it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right.
I'm feeling very brazen.
I just want to point out I was right again about people leaving the state of California. The popular notion there was a mass exodus from California last year is wrong, according to research. At a nonpartisan think tank. It was a bullshit story pushed by the conservative media. It turns out lots of people did move, but they moved around California. They just moved to different cities.
Let me ask you a question, Farrison.
But what was the point of saying everybody's moving to Texas? Like, I hope James Marsden, who moved from L.A. to Texas, didn't get caught up in that fake story.
L.A. is always L.A., Farrison. I said it myself. But there's another
story. He's happy down there, by the way. He likes Austin.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say that, like, when we sit around outside Bill's, yeah, are we a think tank? Could we just be quoted as we're a nonpartisan,
absolutely,
and sometimes partisan think tank of Zuckerman and Ferriston?
The Spike's Car Radio think tank. We are the think tank of this podcast, yes.
Yes, yeah. We're a think
old
tank.
Old men solving problems that no one wants our input on.
Or we could just come up with erroneous information, like everyone's leaving in droves. We're a nonpartisan think tank, and we think everybody's leaving in droves.
I like that. We should do that. We're going to do some Dear Zuckerman in a minute. I know some folks wanted to hear that. I know you wanted to see these first, but I think you'll do better without it. Yeah. You just got to get a little amped up. There's lots of Porsche news, by the way. I don't know if you saw this, Zuckerman. Porsche considering entering F1 in 2025. Porsche and the Volkswagen Group would consider entering Formula One if the next engine regulations due to be introduced in 2025 promote sustainable fuels, the BBC reported. Now, that's on the heels of that story that they've created some new kind of, like, Porsche man fuel that zero emissions. So, it kind of hedging that they don't want to go all electric. They'd rather make their own gas, for lack of a better description. Now they're saying, we'll even race with it with our own gas. How the hell does that work? we make Porsche gas, and only we get to use it? I want to know more about this. Do you want to see them back in Formula One?
Of course. Do you even care? I don't care that much, but I would like to. Yeah, sure. If you ask me today, yeah. Will I remember tomorrow? No.
Do you remember what we got last time they considered Formula One?
What?
The Carrera GT.
Oh.
Remember they made that engine,
decided not,
and now it's in that beautiful car.
Right. Was that engine for sustainable fuels or dinosaur juice?
Earth-murdering German craziness. But they're saying it's the It's funny. I don't see how any of these things are connected, but Formula One's governing body, the FIA, last year delivered the first barrels of 100% sustainable fuel made from bio-waste to engine manufacturers for testing and validation. So Formula One's governing body is pushing this. That makes sense.
What is this bio-waste? Is that poops? Pee-pee poo-poo?
Sure. It's got to be. Yeah, what is bio-waste? Someone will be DMing us tomorrow afternoon with
BDNSM,
all of it,
is right? That what you said?
Yeah.
Bio-waste.
Not the only Porsche news, though, Zuckerman. Porsche has apparently asked boutique car manufacturer Singer to remove its latest off-road-inspired 911 from its website since the automaker's name appears on the coupe.
Shame.
Without license.
Shame.
Singer Vehicle Design's ACS all-terrain competition study has been removed from the customizer's website following its receipt of a message from Porsche's legal department. According to Car Scoops, the issue stems from the embossed Porsche name lettering that adorns the rocker panels of the ACS as well as the Porsche sticker on the rear trunk lid. This is what Porsche had to say about it. We are glad to have a growing community of Porsche enthusiasts. They help us to ensure that so many Porsche cars originally built decades ago remain on the road and are still enjoyed, like Spike and Z's Zagato, a Porsche representative said in a statement. At the same time, I just added the Zagato part, but they did have to get permission. That does prove that Zagato had to get Porsche's permission. At the same time, we have a responsibility to our customers to ensure that Porsche products designed and engineered by us can be clearly and easily identified. This can range from an individual component or piece of clothing using our name through to whole cars. We do this by allowing products created or directly licensed to carry the Porsche name. And as such, you can't use our name.
What if he just deleted the S from Porsche and it was Porsche?
Here's what I think. I think that all but seals, makes the case that there will be a Porsche 911 Safari car and they don't want any confusion in the marketplace.
You think?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Why else would they be so sensitive to it? Because the Singer car was pretty damn cool. Did you have a look at it?
Yeah.
It was great, but it's nothing like what Porsche's Safari 911 appearance package looks like, at least in everybody's guesses and renderings, right? It's a completely different animal. It's a road car, really. Tilted more towards a Matt Farah mobile. But the other one is really a, take it through the Baja country, wild man, right?
Right. Agree.
It's got to be, don't you think?
Well, I never thought of it. You know, that's I got to say, that's a segment of the Porsche world that doesn't really resonate with me. I don't care about Safari cars.
Won't they just beat us over the head with it until we end up buying them?
Okay, they're capable of doing that, but I'm not big on that. I'm not, I didn't like an AMC Eagle in 1980. I wasn't big on, and I've never really been about these car SUV, whatever. I'm not interested. I'm more interested in the Pablo Escobar IROC car.
A lot of folks sent that to us.
Yeah.
You saw that I sent it to Jerry this afternoon.
Yeah.
I know he feels some regret over selling his car, the Revson.
Big mistake. He should. I'll say it right here.
We all make mistakes. It is. He's coming out soon, and we'll do a show here. We'll get Jerry back. I know you guys want to hear him. He's got a lot to say.
Been cooped up.
Do you think he would actually pull? Here's the first thing. I don't know anything about the car. I wasn't able to glean much from that article except for it is a pristine example. But I'm, again, do you really, the heads of drug cartels, are they really the guys that take care of cars?
Okay. All of
nothing against you, drug dealers.
For me, it would be appealing history. For Jerry, I think not. He likes things that were raced by real race car drivers. I would prefer things owned by criminals.
You would not. You would evaluate this the same way you and I with Jerry would all. We would start with the example and go, let's look at the car, what's original, and is it intact, right? You wouldn't just jump in, Zuckerman. Come on. I think it's interesting that it's Pablo Escobar, but you would want to know, matching engine. It said it had only... Didn't it say it only had a few miles on it?
Listen, if it's the real deal, I love it.
Did you read what that article said?
I don't ever read. I form my own opinions, baseless opinions. I didn't read it.
But
I just looked.
Two troubling things. The words Pablo Escobar.
Eh.
Again, no offense to the family or anybody that might want to put a contract out.
A blood-soaked coffin, a blood-soaked never mind.
What?
It's just the history, blood-soaked histories abound in the car world.
I was, you know, and here I am reading The Border, right? And I see what happens to people who go against the cartels. I don't want to be one of those guys.
I don't think anybody from Pablo's days is paying attention.
International, raced and owned by international narco-terrorist Pablo Escobar. Okay, I think you missed something, Zuckerman, and I'm going to find it, and you can tell me what you think this means. The 9/11 RSR went into storage after Escobar's death. The listing notes that making its way back to the U.S., it was restored to its original IROC Fittipaldi livery and body as Escobar had raced it with a 935 body kit. Zuckerman, what he changed the body on it.
Things happen.
The odometer shows 225 miles. It's an exemplary condition.
Yeah, the story doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't make
a
lot of sense, right?
He raced it. He changed it. It only shows 225 miles.
When Escobar raced, were the police chasing him? I mean, was he ever in a position where he was not being, you know, attacked? Let's see. The last time the special Porsche was raced, it was at Daytona, 24 hours and 78.
How can it only have 250 miles on it?
After which it made its way to Colombia, where it was owned and raced. So so he never came for the Daytona 500 by Pablo Escobar. Apparently, in addition to alleged Robin Hood-like dreams of helping his people out of poverty, the king of cocaine also had a thing for racing. He drove it in Colombia's Copa Renault 4, securing second spot after four races. Yeah, who's not going to let that guy win? The guy who won is dead, hung from an overpass somewhere. I don't know.
It's like that story. Remember the goalie of the Colombian team? They murdered him. He scored a goal on his own goal.
Yes.
And they killed him. Yeah.
The car is listed for sale by Atlantis Motor Group through the DuPont Registry. Well, we have
the well-known Atlantis Motor Group. Does that make you feel confident?
I'll tell you what makes me feel confident, Zuckerman. Harry's. We've got a new sponsor, and we love them. They are Harry's. Too often we're choosing between quality or fair price with Harry's. You don't have to choose. They give you award-winning blades at factory direct prices. You know, they sent me the razor and shaving set, Zuckerman, and I was, we had another shave sponsor. I won't say who they are. And it's not Manscaped. We love them. But we had another shaving sponsor. This stuff is amazing. And what these guys have done, I had a call with them 2 days ago, is they, you know how we're getting charged for these razors by these other bigger companies, right?
Ripped off.
These guys saw a little hole in the market for better quality and lower price and no gouging. And they sent me the stuff, and I swear pulling this thing across my face was next level. A next level shave, Zuckerman. I'm going to get you one because I love these guys. They're great. Harry's delivers a close, comfortable shave at a fair price, only $2 per refill. Harry believes in quality so much, they bought their own factory. Guess where? Germany.
Columbia.
No, Germany. So they could own every step of the manufacturing process. Do you get it? They're German. German built, American made, some combination of those things. Harry's German factory is one of the select few manufacturers in the world that have mastered the technology to create the Gothic arch, the gold standard for razor blade grinding.
The Gothic arch.
I don't know what it is, but you pull it across your face and you don't, it just...
Do you think maybe the Atlantis group should market the Gothic arch?
Anyway, they get the Spike stamp of approval. Go, you get the Harry starter set there and you're going to get some free body wash for $3 at harrys.com/spike911. That's over a $16 value for only $3.
How can they make money?
You'll get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, travel cover, travel size body wash. It's an incredible deal, but act fast while supplies last. You got to go to harrys.com/spike911 to redeem your offer. This isn't a code. You just got to go to harrys.com/spike911 to redeem your offer. It's $3. Come on. I used their body wash too. I used all of it. And I know you like these personal grooming stories, Zuckerman. I got into bed My wife walked in the room. She goes, why do you have cologne on? What are you up to?
Disgusting.
And I said, I don't have cologne on. I have Harry's body wash on. She goes, it smells nice.
Ew. And that's a horrifying story.
And then she just went to bed. They ignored me as usual. But at least I smelled good, which that was progress. Progress in my house.
She still ignored you. You should have gotten a blue chews, Ferrison. Why won't they let me sponsor them? I want blue chew stories. I want to hear how you used the blue chews and you were brazen.
Stop
and
giving
you
them free ads.
I want our listeners to say
they don't. Blue chew is not our sponsor. They don't like us.
Why?
Because you described taking their pills through your penis hole, and it's not what was in the ad.
Isn't that how you take your pills?
How do you dissolve it?
No, it's teeth.
Huh?
My
penis
teeth.
Crunch it, but still, you've got some sort of powdery thing that could be caustic to your urethra.
Is it moist environment? It dissolves.
Let's do some Dear Zuckerman before we go, before we bring out Ben Clymer here. How much time do we have? All right, we got a little time. A little bit of time. Not much, all right? These are real letters. These are real letters that were sent into Dear Abby, and Zuckerman is going to answer them his way. Abby had very thoughtful responses. Zuckerman does not. He has very horrible responses. But again, I just want to emphasize these are real letters sent into Dear Abby. Dear Zuckerman, I suspect that something has been going on with my husband and our daughter-in-law. My husband has become obsessed with her, and they both seem to become nervous when they are around me at the same time. My husband is always checking to see when I'm leaving. My son and daughter-in-law and their three kids live in our duplex, but my son isn't home most of the day. Should I be concerned about what's going on with them? Everything is telling me something is not right. Worried in Wisconsin.
Yeah, because in Wisconsin, you bang your daughter-in-law. And that's what's happening.
That's what happens in Wisconsin?
Yeah. We know.
I did not know that. What do you mean?
That's what happens in the backwoods there, Ferrison.
So now I know what happens in Scotland. They're knifing people, and in Wisconsin, you bang your daughter.
Let me just tell you something. If you, Ferrison, being a semi-illiterate person, if you opened up the Bible and you went to Leviticus, you would see that this kind of incest is much higher on the list of prohibited things than anything to do with guy on guy or girl on girl. The likelihood of the head of the household molesting his daughter-in-law was considered to be much more serious.
This isn't a molestation. This is them dating.
They're not dating. They're fucking, Ferriston. There's no dating. He's not taking her out to the Dairy Queen in Wisconsin and buying her a milkshake. They're waiting for mom to leave. She should set a camera up in the house. But you know what? If there's
oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, in the bedrooms. And then she can see hanky-panky, you know, firsthand. And I would tell you something.
What?
You know what? If there's any doubt, there's no doubt. It's what's happening.
Okay, there you go. You should be worried in Wisconsin. All of you in Wisconsin should be worried. Check in the time here. All right, we're all right. All right, Dear Zuckerman. Wow, these are all kind of similar. I have been married for 26 years.
Condolences.
5 years ago, my husband gave a young lady $5,000 through credit card charges over a six-month period. We are not wealthy. When I found the charges in our credit report, he took a second job to pay it off. I don't think their relationship was sexual because he is impotent. It was hurtful. While he was taking this young lady shopping, he told me he was at work. Recently, I accidentally caught him going to another young lady's apartment to help her with things like hanging a TV. I don't care if he helps people. What I do care about is his sneaking around to do it. I have tried talking to him about why he feels he needs to sneak. He has no answer. What makes men sneak, Zuckerman? Deceived in Kentucky.
Well, I can tell you something, Miss Kentuck. he ain't impotent except except in your household. He's
You're right. Yeah,
he's not fucking impotent. He's slinging it around. He just has told you in an effort to keep you away that he can't get it up.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's obvious. You're right. Yes. You've moved right through this one, Zuckerman. You're right. You see, it's there now. It's obvious.
It's obvious.
You see, you don't need to prep on these. You've got right away. You're this is your lawyer training. Your ability to see right through people.
This is my sweet spot.
This is your you have X-ray vision on human beings and their behaviors.
There you
go. It must be honed over years of just sitting down with your clients and clients you don't take and seeing right through their stories.
Sherlock Holmes said, "What the most obvious answer is usually true."
All right, let's do one from a mail reader. Dear Zuckerman, I am a mail reader with a complaint. Have you ever noticed that women hardly ever compliment men on anything? Exclamation point. They expect men to compliment them, but never reciprocate. If you move furniture, take them out for a nice dinner, buy tickets to their favorite show, buy them a gift, they don't have enough manners or couth to say that thank you or express appreciation. Getting a compliment is like pulling teeth from a great white shark while he's feeding. Don't women ever think, maybe I should say something to him instead of expecting him to say it to me? Where do they learn this behavior? Are they taught this growing up, or do they just not care or even realize? Shaking my head in New Jersey.
Ned fucking Flanders. I mean, it's like, okay, dude, you're really talking about one woman in particular, but you really have a self-esteem issue. Right? You just have a self-esteem issue. You got a chip on your shoulder, of course. They're not going to compliment you. You probably have nothing to compliment them. You know, there's not a
lot
of...
Don't you think it's better to expect nothing from your...
Yes, because expectations are resentments under construction, Ferriston. That's what's happening here. He does something with an expectation of praise, okay? Whatever happened to you in kindergarten or with your mother or whatever, it's not relevant anymore. Let it go. You're all right on your own.
You want to do one more?
Sure.
I got one more for you. Dear Zuckerman, I enjoy babysitting for the children of family and friends, but while I have nothing to hide, I hate how everyone seems to have cameras inside. I feel like I'm in a fishbowl, and if I let their kids veg in front of the TV or the computer, I'll be judged as lazy. I also hate having my picture taken, so the idea of being on a live feed all day is off-putting. Do I ask them to turn off their cameras or stop babysitting? I can't be the only person who's uncomfortable being monitored all day. What's a good way of handling this? Monitored in Ohio.
What are you doing to those kids? What is going?
I would say check your toilets for cameras.
Exactly. We're back to the first. We're back to the first problem of what's happening when I leave the house. You know what? You know, open your mouth. If you make it sound like you're doing these people a favor. The way you've written it sounds like you're not charging. If they are paying you, then that's one thing. You know, that's a different, that's one set of dynamics. But if you're doing it as a favor and you don't like how it feels, don't fucking do it.
Yeah, don't walk into the house.
Yeah, you, no one says you don't do anything that you. Here's a general rule in life.
But who's got cameras in their house? Do you have cameras in your house?
I don't have cameras in my house.
Why would you want that?
I wouldn't want that. And who's really looking at it? And no one's really looking at you. We all know no one's really looking at you. That goes for everybody. But you know what? This is a general rule in life, and it goes for babysitting or having sex. If you don't like the way it feels when you're doing it, don't do it. And if you don't like the way it feels when you're babysitting, don't do it. Okay?
Just well, there you it. Go.
There's... Or open your fucking mouth and say, I don't like that. I don't like
that's
it.
This is real thoughtful advice, Zuckerman.
It's not that thoughtful. It's just the way. Just say something. Why are you thinking about this?
Why are people writing these letters?
They're stupid. What do you want me to say? They're weak and they're stupid.
There it is. There's Dear Zuckerman.
It's stupid. Weak and stupid. Can't think for yourself, huh?
If you have a question for Dear Zuckerman and you want to be called stupid and made fun of, just send it in to Spikes Car Radio, 3100 Donald Douglas Loop North, Santa Monica Airport. That's where you'll find us. You know what? If you sell stuff online, you're definitely in the right business. Most people are shopping online more than ever. That means a lot of orders coming in, a lot of orders going out, and you need to ship them. That's why online sellers like you need ShipStation. No matter how much you sell, ShipStation makes it easy to manage. Ship all your orders from all your sales channels faster, cheaper, and more effectively. Import orders from any sales channel. Ship with any carrier. Access discounted shipping rates. Automate just about any shipping task. You'll spend a lot less time on shipping and a lot more time on growing your business. Doesn't matter if you're selling on Amazon, Etsy, your own website, Zuckerman.com. ShipStation funnels all your orders into one simple interface so you can manage from anywhere, even from your cell phone. Here's what you do. You got to use my code Spike911. You're going to get a free 60-day trial. That's 60-day free trial, 2 months free of no hassle, stress-free shipping. Just go to ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and type in Spike911. That's ShipStation, S-H-I-P, Station.com. Enter the offer code Spike911 for 2 free months, and you will make ship happen. You know, I chatted with our friend Ben Clymer, Zuckerman.
Mm-hmm.
We had a nice chat. As I mentioned before, we discussed the future of watch collection. We discussed the acquisition of Crown and Caliber and what they're going to do there. We discussed their $100 million valuation, Ooh. Which I believe is just the beginning for this company as they stole the world's watch business, and now Benny Clymer has it all to himself.
From zero to hero, Ben Clymer.
We discussed his cars, the things he's buying, what he's acquiring. And the fact that that those emails he sends to any of us, we forward to each one of us. There's no secrets between me, you, and Jerry.
Yes.
So be careful. And we know everything that's going on with him. Here's my interview with Hodinkee's Ben Clymer.
what are you watching?
I'm watching... the NHL's Sean Avery busting a man's car mirror in a heated altercation.
How that sounds you, about Ben? Right. That feels on brand for you.
I was just marveling at the stories on TMZ this morning, which I don't check in often, but it's making me laugh at the things they're covering. That was the third one that I went, huh. Moonshiner star Lance Waldthorpe is dead at 30, and it's a photo of a very, very overweight man. And you go, well, there's no surprise. Gorilla glue woman, cancer scare over. Now, here I was. I didn't know that she even had a cancer scare. So,
Nor did I.
I'm kind of behind on the times. But apparently, Gorilla glue woman, her cancer scare is over. So that's we're breathing
Thank
a
goodness.
Sigh of relief. And then I was down to that story of the NHL psychopath breaking off the mirror of what appears to be a nice Uber guy. How are you, Ben?
I'm good. I was just off a company-wide, like all we have all hands meetings, which is like a very corporate thing that we now do. So just checking in with everybody on the team. But now I'm here with you, and I'm in a good spot.
Is that what happens? I did the same thing. I'm coming out of a writing session with a bunch of comedy writers.
Probably a lot more fun than my call. Actually, I shouldn't say that. It was actually a very good call.
It's when you're in your element, you're having fun with your people, and I imagine the Hodinkee people are your people.
They are my people for sure.
Well, that's good. Let's start with Hodinkee and its success, because there's a lot going on. In my research, came across this article about how to build a $100 million e-commerce and media empire by founder Ben Clymer, where I learned... The valuation for Hodinkee is $100 million. Congratulations. How much of that is yours, personally?
Very little. Too little, for sure. too little. But live and learn, right? No, obviously humbling, ridiculous in every way. We've known each other for many years. It's absurd, for sure. But I'm very, very proud to say that we're doing pretty well right now, for sure.
Just because... You know, I think your brand is just emerging. Those, of course, in the know, like me, and a lot of my listeners know who you are and what Hodinkee is.
Yeah.
But tell the story again how you founded what is going to be. I'm sorry I've got workers backing up here occasionally. I'll mute it. Maybe I'll just... Let me close my door. These are the Marc Maron moments of the podcast. Hey! Yeah. Quiet.
is a guy with a giant forklift going down the driveway. Why do they have to be so loud, though? You know, are we trying to notify the deaf? Or could a much lower decibel beep just go, beep, beep, beep? Would we hear it? Why does it have to be, bop, bop? Anyway, Ho Dinky.
Yeah.
I love the story of how it came to be. Tell us quickly that story.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of absurd to even kind of mention at this point, considering what you just mentioned about how big it is now. But I mean, it was really a homegrown blog. I mean, I was working in finance, which, you know, I doubt you've ever been a part of, but it's fucking terrible, as you can imagine, mm-hmm, or at least for somebody like me. And I wanted to be a writer. Like, I wanted to be like a journalist, basically. And so my grandfather had given me one watch. I had one Omega Speedmaster that was his watch, and I wore it every day. And I like watches. I like the internet. I like to write. You know, I was early on a platform called Tumblr, which was really big in like 2008, 2009.
But
and
correct, I started me, write- correct me if I'm wrong. You were laid off.
Yeah.
You were laid off. I mean,
yeah.
And they said, we want you to stay in the office for a year. You can be in your office, but...
So I was laid off after that, effectively. So basically, it was something like, hey, you know, this was the financial crisis, 2008, 2009, which is similar to where we were a year ago. You know, like, things were just like, hey, we're just going to, like, hit pause on everything. You know, like, literally everything. And, like, right. Boop. And I had just joined the company, and they had promised me, I was 25, they had promised me, like, a salary of, like, $100,000 and a bonus and, like, you know, stuff that were, like, you know, it's hard for me to fathom. So I was like, all right, whatever. And they said, like, we just hired you. There's this, you know, kind of, you know, recession going on. So just sit tight. And so they were like, all right, like, we're not letting you go yet. We're not doing anything. There's no downsizing yet. Like, just come in and bide your time, basically. So I did that. And so while I was doing that, I was just hanging out, looking at watches all day on the internet. And, you know, back then, vintage watches were a thing, but they weren't really a thing. And so I started going to these sales, Antiquorum sales, which is like this big watch house. And this was like the first time that, like, actually the very first sale that was meaningful to me was Gandhi's Zenith pocket watch. Which, like, today would be worth, like, you know, I don't know, $300 or $700. And it sold for a lot. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, why would Gandhi's weird Zen pocket watch sell for a lot? But, you know.
What does he need a pocket watch for, Gandhi?
That's what I'm saying. But actually, it actually came with his sandals and, like, the infamous glasses.
I understand glasses. The sandals, but the pocket watch seems a little much for Gandhi, right?
Gotta tell the time.
What else did he have?
Yeah, exactly.
Gandhi switchblade comb? Did he also have one of those?
I mean, it was just such an absurd thing that, like, Gandhi's Zenith would sell. I forget what the value, but I think it was like $70,000, something like that.
Right.
And then shortly after that came Steve McQueen's Rolex. And I was like, oh, fuck. You know, even back then, this was 12 years ago plus, Steve McQueen was still Steve McQueen. Like, you know, everyone idolized him even back then, even before, like, the hashtag menswear world came to be. And that watch sold for like $250, and in the same sale, one of his Monacos, the Heuer Monaco, sold for like $75, or, you know, don't quote me on the numbers, but like a lot of money for a Heuer. And I started writing about it, and GQ contacted me and was like, hey, like, you know, you're writing about watches we've kind of never heard of. Like, you know, there was no such thing as anybody covering vintage watches at scale back then. Do you want to write for us? So I started writing for GQ and Esquire and, you know, other places. And then I went to journalism school in New York and did that for 2 years. And then, you know, the blog just got more and more popular. And then sooner or later, we had people wanting to buy us or invest in us or whatever. And now here we are.
You're worth $100 million. Yeah. And you've effectively stolen the department store watch business. Wait, did journalism school help you in any way? You know, did it help you give you tools to write, or did you already know it?
I mean, look, it gave me a certain level of confidence in myself and a certain level of confidence in kind of, you know, my role in the New York media landscape, if that makes any sense. Like,
fair.
I was lucky enough to get into a good one. I went to Columbia. And like that, you know, you have to remember, like, blog to the Swiss, you know, who is most of our counterparts in this industry, is really a four-letter word, like, literally and figuratively. Like, you know, this was like, oh, a blog? Like, no, ugh. You know, just like they spoke down to me and all digital folks with such disdain for so long. And like my only ammunition to counter them was like, okay, sure. Yes, it's a blog with a funny name. But by the way, I'm going to journalism school at like a pretty good place. Like, you know, I'm not a total idiot, even though you might think I am, you know? So in that regard, it did serve its purpose for sure. And I'm still involved there. And I still, you know, I still know those guys. And, you know, it's an amazing program.
Wow. So, and now here you sit, Ho Dinky.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, is, you know, and what I was trying to get at is it's just not mainstream yet, but it's clear it to me, it's going to be like the word Target or Kmart. So, like,
we'll see.
I mean, not retailers like that, but a known name like that, because as these, you know, these Goliaths, even like a Neiman Marcus, these kind of old maids of retail, kind of brick and mortar with tons of stuff you don't want. Here comes, you know, a site like Hodinkee that's focused, it's intelligent, the writing's good, the focus is excellent, the goods are everything we want. It's aspirational, but it's also affordable at times.
Right.
And it speaks to the curated gentleman that Zuckerman and I will never be. And you are kind of that.
We're approaching that. We're approaching it, to 200 million.
Yeah, it's our fantasy of who we want to be. And, you know, I don't know. 100 million just seems low. It seems like that's where this great story starts. And I'm impressed. And I just want to say congratulations. And you know, I noticed recently you acquired Crown and Caliber, right?
Yeah, we did very recently.
Now that seems like, hey, Hodinkee wants to be in the pre-owned watch biz, and perhaps instead of, you know, calling the kids and saying let's do this all over again, we've got this great company over here with people we like and know. Why don't we acquire it? What's the plan?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you nailed it, right? Like, I know you know the guys at Crown and Caliber very well.
I do,
like,
very well.
Yeah, they're incredible. I mean, it really, you know, it's so seldom that we look around the watch industry and identify another player that like has the integrity, has the intelligence, has the data, has everything you want in a digital kind of native brand in the watch space. And so like, okay, like the Crown and Caliber really had it. We had been so impressed with everything they've done from the beginning, and Hamilton, the founder, and I have been friends for years. I mean, I think we mentioned this in one of the stories, but like we had dinner together in 2015, right around the corner here in Soho. And we talked about merging back then. I mean, we're talking 6 years ago.
Wow.
And, you know, neither of us were ready. We had, you know, nobody, we were fucking kids. We had no idea what we were doing. But like, this was always in the back of our mind. And then, you know, pre-owned is like resale and retrade, and pre-owned is like, that's the future of everything in many ways, right? You see it with sneakers, you see it with cards, you see it with cars. And look, I mean, we needed to be in that space. We wanted to be in that space. And we just said, hey, like, let's do this deal together. And, you know, Hamilton is still with us, of course. And, you know, all the team in Atlanta are all still with us. That's who I was just on the call with before. And like, I think we're going to do great things. There's a long way to go. I mean, integrating, you know, a massive office in Atlanta and an office in New York, two very different cultures, like, you know, they are pre-owned, which caters to a very different audience than ours, which is full price every day. Like, there's no discounts at all. But like, in many ways, I think we've got the best of both worlds now.
How do you separate that out? I mean, are you going to call it Hodinkee? Are you going to change Crown and Caliber? Or
look, Crown and Caliber has its own base, and like people love it. You know, like we don't want to mess with success. I think that there will be ways to integrate and work together for sure. And we're like, Hodinkee is now selling a very small number of pre-owned watches on our site once a week that come from their inventory, our inventory down there. But it's a super strong brand, and I think, look, we'll take everything as it goes and be dynamic about it. But you know, we have a lot of respect for what they built, and they're running a great business as is. So we're not going into changing anything.
When you talk about that, like you're saying, like we have a 1680 with a red Submariner, right? Will that automatically go to Hodinkee's vintage site rather than stay on Crown and Caliber? Is that the idea?
Probably. You know, I mean, the thing is, like our Hodinkee was never set up like we. We are really like we have official authorized dealership contracts with these brands, with Tag Heuer, with Omega, whatever. Like our product comes from these brands directly. Like it's all brand new. It's very easy. You know, it's hard to get there, but it's easy once you have it. And Crown and Caliber has a very different thing where like their job is procuring product from people like you or just people on the street. And so, you know, they have so many more inbounds than we will ever have. Mm-hmm. And they get stuff that like just doesn't make like a 1680 Red Sub or a Paul Newman Daytona or you know some big vintage watch or Patek or whatever just doesn't make sense for their platform. It's just not who they are, but it might make sense for ours. And in that case, we can really leverage each other for sure, and vice versa. You know, I mean, there is a massive audience of people that want you know a nice Omega or Breitling for $4,500 that you know they just want a cool watch.
Yeah.
So we hope to work together for sure.
I think that's smart because I notice as I'm one of their ambassadors as well as one of yours, but when I want to wear something different that's not in my collection, I go there and they're nice enough to give it to me for a month and I do a couple posts and I talk about it. I do notice that the kind of juicy vintage stuff that they acquire lingers on that site because when I think of juicy vintage, I think of Hodinkee. Right. And that same watch, when it's on your site, is going to be like, well, now I know Ben and his crew have vetted this watch and I can rely on it and trust it. Now I'm going to buy that Redline sub there. Here, I'm not so sure. These guys are geniuses at getting me a watch that's below what I might have paid, unless they've, of course, gone up. But something pre-owned and new that I'm buying out, the enjoying some of the depreciation and or... You know, I know they've appreciated like new Daytonas, but they have a few of them for me to choose one and I can get one quick, right?
That's exactly it. It's really totally separate audiences. I mean, like, it's really kind of amazing how different the audiences are, even though we're like, you think the watch world is very small, and it is.
Right, right.
But totally, totally separate kind of buying patterns for both of our consumers. So
now, when are you and I going to do this with cars?
When are
we getting together to go, now let's do the car thing?
So, I mean, what do you think's going on in the car? Like, what do you think of Bring a Trailer being acquired by Hearst? Doug DeBuro's got his thing. What do you think of all this stuff?
Well, I was reading that Doug is doing very well. He's selling 60 cars a week. Chris Harris is, I don't know what's going on with him in England. Bring a Trailer, they sold that company. I heard the number. I was impressed. It's up there with your number. And congratulations to Randy Nonnenberg. You know, you said something so interesting, that the pre-owned market of everything. The larger picture for me is the opportunity of online and the internet, and maybe this is obvious and you guys have known it forever, is these Goliaths of brick and mortar, you can just go steal their business right now. You can become their business online by curating, being focused, adding some sort of content to it, writing, film, you know, and being a destination not just to buy things, but to maybe read a couple articles. Maybe get some feedback and then, either shop for something new and old. So, you know, Bring a Trailer stole the auction business. They stole
it.
It was just sitting there.
Yeah.
They were the ones to go, hey, if I want to buy a vintage car, why do I have to wait till August and go to Monterey? I don't even know where that is. Carmel, that's more. How about I look when I have a little extra money and they curate the cars a little bit and make them affordable. And boom, there they go. Doug DeMuro. It's like, we love Doug DeMuro. We love the way he presents cars. He's got his own little pocket. And Chris Harris has kind of the higher priced classic cars. You know, it's amazing. It is.
And I think what is kind of connective about all the folks that you just mentioned, including ourselves, is like, look, like, you know, Dave Gooding, RM, all these guys, like, they are amazing and they will get world class cars forever. But what they don't have, and that what Bring a Trailer certainly has, or we have, Doug has, et cetera, is community, right? Like, we met each other through watches. And like, if I'm looking at a watch or you're looking at a watch, you can text me and say, hey, what do you think about this? The Goodings of the world, who, again, I'm a client of and adore, RM, et cetera, like, there's no community at all. In fact, their entire business is based on separating people, right? Like, they don't, like, you know, I bought a car from them. Like, I found out later who actually owned the car, and now I know him. But, like, you know, their business is literally about keeping people apart.
Yeah.
Whereas Bring a Trailer is about bringing people together. And I think that is just a more holistic.
I don't know. I think that I would disagree that they do have community. It's just this community is only together in the tent. Like, when you go to a Gooding event, it's super fun. And, you know, you're like, oh my God, where have you been? It's a big class reunion event, and that's their community. But what I think you mean is the community doesn't interact every other day. It's three times a year. You're in Arizona, you're there, maybe you're at Amelia, and that's it. And if you don't fly there, you can't really interact. So they're all playing catch up to you, you know. And
funny. It's like, look, the biggest fear for any vintage car buyer or any vintage watch buyer is like, oh shit, you didn't know that like those hands were redone, or you didn't know that like this isn't matching numbers or whatever. And on Bring a Trailer or Hodinkee or anything like that, like, the community will identify that. It'll self-police and say, this is not original transmission. Like, this is not original engine, blah, blah, blah. And at the auction houses, yes, they'll tell you, of course. But it's not like the community helps you figure that out. And I think that's the big difference there.
The community and the owner.
Right.
But still, you know, you hear about those deals going sideways. But I think that's just part of the price of doing business. You know, not long ago, I got an email from our mutual friend, Jerry Seinfeld.
Sure.
And he sent me some of the cars in your collection. He goes, look what Climber's up to.
we're doing okay.
Look what he's doing. And he started, and I won't share them unless you want to share them, but you've acquired some cool cars here. Well, that you, look, that you've you know, got going on. What do you want to talk about? That, what do you not want to talk about? You've got beautiful things.
We share you and I share the 356 Zagato, so that has to be talked about for sure.
Let's talk about the Zagato. All right.
I mean that car to me. We haven't really spoken that much about it. How do you and Zuckerman kind of view that car in your collection?
It is a crown jewel car that is only taken out for special occasions. That is the star of the collection.
Yeah.
Wildly popular. That we had
insanely popular.
That we had to work very hard to get it there. We consider ourselves the fathers of the car, along with the Zagato Company and John Wilhoit.
Yeah.
which is the diplomatic way of saying it was beautiful, but it didn't work right when we got it. And there's some resentment towards Zagato for, you know, not making us whole on the money we had to spend after the car was delivered. Yet it doesn't diminish our love for this thing.
So exact same experience, exactly the same. I mean, that car, everywhere you go, people just stop and are in awe of that thing. If they know what it is, they're blown away. Most people think I'm you when I'm driving around town. Like, bike, you know? So, you know, whatever. But
how did you get your car working right? What did you have to do to your car?
So I brought the car in the summer, actually the same summer as you. And it was in New York, you know, I'm up here in New York. And I'm driving it around. I'm like, this just doesn't, like, the transmission is super soupy. I mean, way more soupy than a normal 356, which I've had. And so I had the transmission done in New York and Westchester before. I drove the car to Pebble Beach, just like you did. And so I drive it, I send it out to LA, and we're going to drive up with some friends to Monterey. And about halfway through the trip in San Luis Obispo, transmission blows. I mean, like, just gone. I can't go forward, can't go back. And I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, I waited for this car for like 3.5 years, you know. And so I found this guy. His name is, you know what, I'm gonna look it up while I'm on the call because I want to give him a proper shout out. This guy saved my life. This guy, Franz from San Luis Obispo, dropped my engine, fixed my transmission in 24 hours. Like, dropped the whole thing.
Wow.
Did the whole thing. And
my friend
saved my trip.
Is the mayor of San Luis Obispo. Should I have her write up some sort of accommodation to him?
I mean, honestly, yes. Like, I would give this person a medal if I could.
Let's do that.
And
what
so
a guy.
Incredible. And, like, you know, just he's like a real, you know, hardcore Porsche mechanic. The odds of me breaking down within 5 miles of this guy's shop was just like, it was,
yeah,
know, somebody was looking out for me. So he fixed my car in San Luis Obispo. And then I drove it on to Pebble Beach and drove it around there, et cetera, et cetera. And then went on beyond that and went up to north of San Francisco before I shipped it back. So then when I got it back to New York, I was like, hey, let's go through this whole thing. And, you know, I basically redid the entire engine. Put on Weber carbs just for my own interest, you know, and just kind of made a little bit more. And now it's rock solid. It's actually
that's what we did too. Yeah, you know, Zagato and the new. I think on this next round of cars, I've heard they're going to be sending to a master mechanic, a restorer, restoration expert, Peter Ivanson, I think is his name. Does that ring a bell?
He's a 4-cam expert.
He can put in one of these repro 4-cams or
got it.
What I think their mistake was and what they realized too late was they were farming out the mechanicals to local Porsche shops.
Right.
Like, and they were known, and, you know, John Wilhoit knew exactly the shop, and they were like, well, wait, they did it? Right? So when we came back, John was like, here's what I would have done, you know, we discovered our engine was a Super 90, he goes, why don't you rebuild it? He goes, this is just, you know, Zagato didn't run the VIN number of your matching number engine, it's a Super 90,
right?
Yeah. What, you're not at the right horsepower. Let's do this right. So we spent a year getting it right, and it was worth it. It, you know, the creation is unlike, you know, anything that I've ever driven before. It's reminiscent of these Abarth Carrera GTLs, where all 20 are different. When I look at your car and I look at some of the other cars in Europe, and the story is the same. The Italians got some stuff right. And then, like with the Abarth, they farmed it out to a bunch of different, coach builders, and they all did different bodies, and everything is messed up. The moment I forgave Zagato a little bit was when Leno, I was telling him this story. He said, he goes, geez, you know, with the Italians, I'm surprised you even got a car. Usually they just take the money and run. And then, you know, I was like, oh, I guess you're right. And he goes, yeah, they're a bunch of thieves. Yeah. And I went, well, yeah, that's kind of half right. But, you know,
I mean, look. Okay.
It's part of the charm.
It is.
It was painful for us. But moving forward in car history, these cars are all special, you know, whether we keep them or not. And it's going to be a funny beat of history. And I'm glad that you and I are talking about it, so it's documented somewhere and somebody can hear about their car maybe 100 years from now and this is why it works right.
And I think what's so interesting is, like, look, Zagato is a coach builder. Like, that is the actual definition. They're not a mechanic. And, I mean, if you look at all the cars, like the Alphas and the Ferraris that are from the 50s and 60s, they weren't touching the engines. You know, they were just building bodies. And so that's why I kind of give them a pass. Like, you know, they are not supposed to be good at putting together an engine or whatever.
Right.
The body work is spectacular. I mean, the panel fit's amazing. The fit and finish is incredible. Like, they nailed the important stuff.
The design is the important thing that they nailed.
It's remarkable.
It's like, and it was there the whole time. You know, it's like Kaiser Sose. I remember reading the very first email that Paolo sent going, this is great. And then I remember looking at the mechanical going, well, that's a picture of a really nice, clean engine. Yeah. I guess that means they're going to do an engine rebuild from scratch, but nowhere in that contract did it say that. And I let it go. I don't know what I did in the next moment, but I moved on past it. But that was the moment my brain was going, wait a minute, dig in on the mechanicals here. You know, maybe, you know, and what I would have done is to say, hey, get the body right, get the donor card, let's send the whole thing out to Long Beach and let it get assembled by John Wilhoit, because then I believe that's what they're doing with this next round of Pete Iverson. I've heard they're selling Zagato if it's not already sold. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that. Somebody mentioned it to me recently, I think because you posted it, but I haven't heard that. But then again, like, you know, I'm not, you know, I love Zagato cars. I have three of them, but I'm not in the loop with them at all. So you know, I can ask them, but
maybe that's why they didn't reimburse us. They don't want a scandal.
Exactly right.
But I'll connect with the new owners and send them my check.
Exactly.
All right, this is great. Let me talk about, before we go, because we're almost up in time.
Sure.
What are the stuff? You got this Zagato, right?
Yep. So I've got the...
What else are you acquiring right now?
Well, a car that is probably very appropriate for this platform is I bought... So, you know, I used to own Jeff Swartz 65 911, like the white 65 911, which was in L.A., car. I had that for about 3 years, and then somebody approached me, do you want to sell it? Sure, moment of weakness. I regret it.
Yeah, why not?
So I wanted to find another early short wheelbase car. So I found an amazing 67S, which is, look, it's the white car, but a little bit more jacked up, and it is spectacular. I mean, it is really, that's probably one of the cars that Jerry was talking about. It's an Aga Blue car, original paint.
I'm looking at it. Yeah, yeah.
It's a killer. It's a real killer. And so that car is from Massachusetts.
And
lived in LA for the majority of its life. Basically one owner for over 45 years, fully documented. It's a killer. That car, I really just got it in the fall, so I'm just starting to drive it now that the weather's breaking. That is a perfect car. It really, really is.
Is that original paint everywhere?
That is original paint everywhere.
Wow, look at some of it. And where in Massachusetts?
So that's a really good question. I forget. I'm going to say Warren, Massachusetts, don't quote me on that. But a dealer up there called Auto Engineering, which is no longer around. But I mean, the stack of documents are like this. I mean, it's everything from, like, you know, the owner of it got an emissions ticket in LA in 1992. I've got the summit. Like, I've got the citation. I also have the work that they did to fix it. Like, I've got everything on it. And the original owner of it is still around. He went back to Europe, but he's like, I've talked to him over email. And that's a big thing for me, is like being able to piece together the histories of these cars. And so my Alfa Zagato, which I think we talked about last time, I'm not sure, was originally owned by Johnny Bulgari of Bulgari, who I know over email. And so he was able to give me, like, why I bought the car, what color it was. You know, I drove it in these number of races, and I've got like 80 photographs directly from Johnny himself of the car in period. So, like, the history is, like, I'm a total nerd about this stuff, which is not a surprise.
Oh, yeah. No,
so
that's
having
great.
Having the history is really neat.
It is. History is important. You want a good story. You don't want any goofball dealers to have touched it, you know, that you can't stand.
Yeah.
And I do find that thinking about the old guy or old girl that had it kind of infuses the driving experience, especially when it comes to originality like this car right here. This is a beautiful car.
Thank you. And that's really where my head is right now. It's like my very first really good original car was the 911. That was painted once, but original otherwise. And then I bought this Alfa Romeo Sprint Zagato, which is that kind of like jelly bean looking thing. That was Johnny Bulgari's car. That is incredibly original. Like, it ran Targa Florio 3 times and has the Targa Florio sticker on the windshield mm-hmm. still. And it was parked in Queens, Laurelton, Queens, right by JFK for like 50 years. Wow. And that car kind of changed me. I said, you know what, like, original cars is what I want now. And so when I was looking for the 67, I really wanted to find an original paint car. And I did. And I have to say, it is super rewarding because of it, for sure.
Let me ask you one more Zagato question. Does your gas meter work?
No. I mean, so it does go up and down, but like when it's totally full, it only goes up to about halfway.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that what yours does?
No, we fixed it.
Does it go all the way up when it's full?
John Wilhoit, you heard the argument maybe back and forth about what's better, true full or true empty. Zuckerman and I were arguing for a while, and Wilhoit, he goes, no, I got it all. He somehow managed to engineer a fuel sender that now we read true full and true empty, and everything's fine. But yeah. I believe the mechanic that built your car is different than ours, so you don't have any problem with the fuel tank and the breather spilling fuel anywhere.
No, but I remember you or Zuckerman told me that you did right when you got the car, right?
Oh yeah. Whoever did ours lined the gas tank with the wrong liner, so on the first tank of gas, everything peeled off like a dilapidated apartment ceiling. Just big chunks. And then clogged the engine.
Yeah, they're Italian.
We still have that. Maybe we should give away that gas tank on the show. We'll do it as a big giveaway. The Zagato shit gas tank. And then we fabricated a new one that's absolute perfection from our friend. But it's tricky because it's that small trunk is really flat. So
yeah,
it's really hard to get a true read on that. I'm trying to think, were there any other little deals? Do you have any visibility, issues with the rear view mirror?
No, I don't.
Ours kind of looks down a little bit, but you're fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, I just bent it up. Have you, what I was going to ask you, something that I've been like dying to do, Seinfeld has an Abarth, does he not?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you gotten those two cars together?
No. In fact,
you gotta do that.
In fact, because Jerry hasn't really been out when we've had the car. We were just talking about this. He's coming out in a couple weeks, and that's what we have to do. You're right.
You got to do that, right? I mean, this is like the missing link to that car.
Yeah, yeah. No, I first want him to drive the car because he's one of the few people who's driven and owns everything. Right. And as you know, this car, it has a unique driving experience. It's unique.
It really
does. It has shades of 550, shades of mid 60s 356 SC. Reliable. Mm-hmm. It's so many different things at once, and still works. Yeah. I want to hear what he says. I want his review, which he won't tell me. He won't tell me the full truth. He'll be kind.
Well, you know,
you'll have to. Maybe I'll have to ask someone who knows him. What did he really say after that? Because he's very polite.
I'm sure.
But if I can,
it's just when he's driven everything. You know.
Yeah. No, he loves the way it looks. He's really floored by the design of the car. Tell me more.
What I was going to say is the interesting thing about the Alfa, the Lancia, and this car is what it really started to make me appreciate just aluminum body cars in general, right? Like all Zagatos are aluminum. And so I've had a normal 356. Like, this car is so much more fun to drive simply because it's that much lighter.
Yeah, and small, right? Yeah. No, you're exactly right. I had the same realization that aluminum is the way to go until the crash.
exactly.
Watches. One quick watch question, and then I'm going to let you go. Sir. Where is... since I am an enthusiast and I don't know the market, where's the excitement in the watch collecting market right now?
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, a lot of the basic bitch guys are still on like the Daytonas and the modern subs and the Nautilus and all that. Like, all that is hot. And like, if you can get any of that stuff at retail, do it all day. Don't even think about it. Just put down your credit card. But I think what's really up and coming are watches from the 90s and early 2000s, because like vintage was so hot. I mean, like, red hot, the Paul Newman craze, whatever. And that is so far beyond, approachable for 99% of humanity.
Right.
And then the Nautilus Daytona stuff, you can't get unless you have a relationship with a dealer. And so it's like, now we're looking at all the stuff in between. So like, it's a little bit like how I see like supercars from the 80s and 90s really being hot right now. So similar thinking with watches. So like, early Roger Dubuis watches and early watches from Daniel Roth in the 90s and early Longas. You know, Longa was kind of reborn in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that is really starting to take off just because it's not through the roof already. And it's fun. And like there's still a lot of territory that's uncharted yet. And I think that'll be a lot of fun for a lot of people. And I think that was part of the thinking in Crown and Caliber is like this, like that's their stock and trade. It's like stuff that's not really vintage, that's not new either, but like kind of in that gray area in between. And I think that is where a lot of people are going to have a lot of fun. You're going to start to see, like, you know, you're going to have nicknames for Submariners from 2006. You know, you're going to have a nickname for a Daytona from like 1998 that like never existed before. Like we had Patrizzi and Zenith and all that, but nothing beyond that. And now we're starting to see that a little bit with like the delineation of different marks in like, you know, 14-270 Explorers and things like that. So I would say watches from the 90s through like, you know, 2010s.
There you go.
There you have it.
Ben Clymer.
Yes,
congratulations
sir.
On your big success at Hodinkee.
Thank you, sir.
I'm excited.
I appreciate
you have
it.
Lots and lots of money to buy cars. Just know everything you send Jerry will come my way. And that goes to Zuckerman. So don't say anything that'll embarrass you because all of us are watching you very closely.
Well noted, sir. Well, great to catch up, Spike.
Good to talk to you. We'll see you when you make it out here.
Okay. Take care.
Well, and we're back.
That's it, Zuckerman. What are we? What would you say we pause between that setup and it's like 1 second,
3.5 seconds at tops,
as we say goodbye to everyone. But it's nice to hear from Ben. He's going to come hang out with us once this thing's over. It's almost over. You're vaccinated. You're done.
Yep.
Hopefully, I'll have mine the next few weeks. I'm going to open it up to everybody. And what do you think? Are we playing variant roulette here? Do you think the variants come and destroy us again, or do you think we're all fine?
I think we're fine.
You do?
Yep.
I do too. I'm hopeful that this summer we'll have maybe even get up to Pebble Beach.
The Roaring Twenties, Ferriston.
You know, the Audrain Concours in the fall wants us to come there and do a show. What do you think about that?
If they're paying, I'm going.
You know who's going to be in Newport?
Ooh.
Swiggins and Peabody, my friend.
Oh, we must find them.
We could do a live Swiggins and Peabody. They said, who do you want to talk to? What kind of form do you want to do? And I thought it. I didn't write it. But
Most Swiggins-y people we could find.
We would have to put on the whale pants and the popped pink collars and the whole deal and go in and do Swiggins and Peabody.
That would be fantastic.
right there where they were born. Anyway. It's good to chat with you all. Next week, I said, we've got Mr. Jeremy Piven. He bought a Tesla. He's going to tell us about that in his new movie. We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio, brought to you by Hangar 56. Listen to new episodes every Wednesday, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.